a warning?
Hey! There's nothing to worry about.
I worried that you work in an office. Have children. Celebrate wedding anniversaries. The world of heterosexual is a sick and boring life.
Well, now that there's just us, would you please tell me all your names again and how old you are?
I'm Lisa. I'm 16 years old and I don't need a governess.
Well, I'm glad you told me, Lisa. We'll just be good friends.
I'm Friedrich. I'm 14. I'm impossible.
Really? Who told you that, Friedrich?
Fräulein Josephine. 4 governesses ago.
I'm Brigitta.
Didn't tell me how old you are, Louisa.
I'm Brigitta. She's Louisa. She's 13 years old, and you're smart. I'm 10, and I think your dress is the ugliest one I ever saw.
Brigitta, you shouldn't say that.
Why not? Don't you think it's ugly?
Of course. But Fräulein Hilda's was ugliest. I'm Kurt. I'm 11. I'm incorrigible.
Congratulations.
What's incorrigible?
I think it means you want to be treated like a boy.
Mm-hmm. I'm Marta, and I'm going to be 7 on Tuesday, and I'd like a pink parasol.
Well, pink's my favorite color, too. Yes, you're Gretel. And you're 5 years old? My, you're practically a lady. Now I have to tell you a secret. I've never been a governess before.
You mean you don't know anything about being a governess?
Nothing. I'll need lots of advice.
Well, the best way to start is to be sure to tell Father to mind his own business.
You must never come to dinner on time.
Never eat your soup quietly.
And during dessert, always blow your nose.
Don't you believe a word they say, Fräulein Maria.
Oh, why not?
Because I like you.
Oh, welcome back to the show.
Welcome back to the show. We were kind of hesitant when to start on mic.
I was waiting for a good in on
I mean,
song.
We don't have the overture a lot on this show, but a very special movie today that needs one.
I'm glad we're including the entire overture. It's like I'm sitting in the theater. We just don't get to the theater often enough. Listeners, my name's Pete.
And I'm Scott. And these are the movies that made us gay.
Yes.
You can probably guess by the opening theme. We got to the Sound of Music episode, and we invited our friend Mitchell over.
Mitchell, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Yeah, I mean, you got a good one. I've always known that you were just kind of... I wanted to have you on our show. You're a very good friend of us, and I wanted to save, like, a good, like, classic movie for you.
Yeah. And you're a good talker.
So and you're a good talker.
We knew we'd get a good conversation.
Yeah, I love a good old Hollywood idea.
Yeah. So, listeners, this is going to be a fun episode. I hope you bitches are ready because...
We watched The Sound of Music, directed by Robert Wise, written by Ernest Lyman, based on the musical by Rodgers and Hammerstein, which was on Broadway in 1959 and then later went to the West End in 1961. The Sound of Music, a movie I'm very excited to talk about. I love this movie.
So this is post-Mary Poppins.
So this movie, I was looking at kind of the timeline of Julie Andrews' career. So filming for this movie took place March to September in 1964 in Los Angeles and Salzburg. This movie came out a mere probably weeks after Julie Andrews won her Oscar for Mary Poppins. So it was like bang, 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 bang.
Got it. So
all of these things happened at once.
Mary Poppins is released in 1964. She wins Best Actress in a Motion Picture. And a couple of weeks or months later, The Sound of Music is released in theaters in the United States, 1965.
So yeah, and she pretty much made them back to back.
So Julie Andrews is on a roll. I feel like for me, growing up, we were a Mary Poppins house. And I know it's not one or the other, and it doesn't always have to be.
We were
but
both.
For us, it was. And my mom is just like, Sound of Music, who? Like, we watched Mary Poppins a lot. we'll talk about all of our kind. I'll get to my kind of intro to Sound of Music. But Mitchell, how do you remember being introduced to this movie, if at all?
One of the many films my mom introduced me to, like, I know I've talked to you guys about it before, how mm-hmm. I joke that my mom groomed me to be gay.
Yes.
And would expose me to certain movies and media.
Mm-hmm.
And this happened to be one of them. And it was one of the earlier, like, big, like, classic Hollywood production musicals that I had seen, and kind of, like, roped me in to then want to go forth and watch other ones. But it's just, I don't know. It has a special place in my heart. I love the songs.
Yeah.
I did 16 Going on 17 with a friend of mine for a final in drama class my senior year of high school. Gay.
Who were you?
I was Liesl. Gay. But no, it was, we got a B minus.
Not a B minus.
We lip synced.
You lip synced. Okay, okay.
It was one of the options.
That's fun, though. I like that. That's a fun. Those crickets. There's a lot of them.
I know.
That didn't mean to be that long. okay, that's cool, though. I love that.
Yeah.
I love that. Scott, what about you? You've been watching this since as long as you can remember.
Yeah. I mean, I was trying to think today when I first watched this movie, and I think that I would have had to have watched one of the major television showings of this. That I also think that I only could watch half of it. I'm not sure if I had to go to bed because it is a long ass movie,
right,
or if it was back when they would just broadcast this on two nights because it was so long.
Mm-hmm.
I almost think that it was over two nights. Yeah.
I mean, I could see that.
I can't remember, but I
on
only.
On network TV with commercials, yeah, this will probably take a good 4 hours to get through.
3 to 5 business days.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. But I remember watching it with my mom. When watching it on TV, and mm-hmm. then I remember us getting the VHS for it for one of its major home video releases in the 90s. So, like, what would have that have been in the 90s? That would have been, like, 30 years? Yeah.
95 would have been its 30th anniversary.
I remember we had this on cassette, and I remember one cassette.
One big thick-ass tape
that it had this entire almost three-hour movie on.
Love it. Okay.
But you know what? When we were watching it last night, I do have to say, the first, like, 2.5 hours of this movie...
The first
2.5 hours of this movie kind of fucking slap.
Yeah.
And no, I feel no. like the I've first, only yes. been watching it for 30 minutes.
Right.
I feel like this viewing, I really saw, like, the back end of once they get back from the honeymoon of that, all right, we need to speed this shit up.
That's when I always stop watching.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so, like I said before, and I think I talked about this in our Mary Poppins episode, starring special guest, friend of the pod, Daniel Franzese.
Mm-hmm. Julie's been discussed on the show.
Right. I think I mentioned it then that as a kid, we were at Mary Poppins house. And the thing is, I think it's because my dad, like, paid the cable guy to get us the Disney Channel.
Ooh, rich.
And so we had he like paid him off like $50, so we had it forever and didn't have to pay for it.
Oh.
Because at that time, Disney Channel wasn't basic. Disney Channel was premium. And you had to pay monthly like HBO and Showtime. But he probably slipped the cable guy like $25 or
like,
something
hey,
in the 80s.
Wires, do something for
and
us.
He got us a Disney Channel. Because I always remember having the Disney Channel. So we watched Mary Poppins. Okay, and then we also had a cassette tape of all of these like classic Disney songs that my sister and I would just listen to a lot. And I'm talking like 6 year olds. I'm not mm-hmm. talking about like we were 14 listening to, like, you know, supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. We were like little, right? So as a little kid, that was my Julie Andrews kind of exposure, and I thought Julie Andrews as Mary Poppins. I was Leslie Jordan on the Drag Race panel.
She's beautiful.
I just thought with that dark hair and that, like, I think she has blue eyes, and it was just like, oh my God, Julie Andrews.
Perfect,
Mary Poppins,
rosy cheeks.
So beautiful. And then our choir teacher in elementary school, Mr. Hammerbacher, Mr. Hammerbacher. He was the choir teacher at St. Stephen's. He was really tall, but I was a little kid, so maybe he was like 5'10". But to me, he was like this giant man, and he had a big bushy beard, and he would wear like plaid shirts, look like a brawny man, and he would play acoustic guitar and come and teach us music. As like, I'm talking private elementary school, private Catholic school in the 80s, so music class was like 20 minutes every 2 weeks, mm-hmm. you know? So
ours was kind of the same.
So he would come in and sing songs, and like he gave us these like lyric sheets and we'd sing along, and some of them would be Disney songs, but some of them were Sound of Music songs. And I was like, what are these cutesy little songs that he made up? Like, he's such a good, like...
Do-re-mi?
Musician. Do-re-mi. Yeah, I was like, oh my God, so cute. Not knowing from Boo that this is from a movie. But the thing is, once I was really exposed to it, I was just like, oh, but why do I know every single song? Not having seen the movie until, like, my 20s, every song, I was like, oh, I know this one.
I don't even think that you had watched all of this movie until you started going out with me.
Probably not.
I don't think that you had.
Because Earhart used to get me to watch it because he loved it. And okay. Earhart's straight, and he was like, girl, Sound of Music, come on.
Fucking slaps.
Yeah.
See, I would just get in random, like, I would, like, get home and be like, I want to watch Sound of Music, but only up until, like, The Lonely Goat Herd.
So that's my thing. This to me feels like my experience with Selena, where it just turned it off at a certain point.
Yeah,
I don't need to see what happens.
I know what happens.
I know. We know the story.
Yeah. Oh, I like to watch all of it.
Okay,
I do think that there's something so suspenseful when they're running from the Nazis at the end of this movie that still kind of does it for me. When they're like hiding behind those graves.
Well, that turns into like a weird, like Born Identity kind of weird situation where they're hiding in the flashlights.
It gives me anxiety.
It really does. It's anxiety.
And you know, I talk about on the show of sewing room cinema that my mom would be working on sewing projects and we would just have a movie on and I would watch a movie as she was working on something.
Right.
And I want to say that our Sound and Music VHS was in heavy rotation.
Okay.
For the sewing room cinema.
Yeah.
My mom told me today that this was always a standby for my sister Nicole whenever she was sick, that she would put on the Sound of Music. And also my love for this movie kind of followed me into young adulthood, because I remember in college finding at the thrift store a cassette tape of the soundtrack, and I would just drive around Missoula, Montana, just doing my errands listening to the Sound of Music soundtrack.
Yeah,
that me and my friend Hunter would just be like driving around town singing like 16 going on 17 and
Gay.
The Problem Gay. With Maria. Yep.
Well, that's the thing. I think just because, like I said, even for me not watching the movie, but we just live on Earth in America in the 80s and 90s and 2000s.
All of these songs slap.
Well, all those songs also... I think some of them got licensed for commercials in the 90s.
Yeah.
I feel like 16 going on 17 was like in a lot of like commercials. It just became part of like this cultural
fabric.
For some
reason, my favorite things became like a holiday song.
Why? I was talking about that. So we work in retail.
I looked it up.
Okay.
I looked it up.
Tell us.
How it happens.
It was because of that 1961 holiday special that Julie Andrews did when she sang My Favorite Things, and then it became associated with the holiday.
And there's kind of Christmas lyrics in it.
Yeah, and it's like,
sort of.
Like, it's like, oh, you know,
they're like presents,
brown paper packages tied up with strings, like gifts, and it's like My Favorite Things, like things I would receive as a gift. But it didn't click with me until I looked it up. Because I was why is this a Christmas song? Why am I walking through Macy's hearing like, My Favorite Things?
So we've worked shitty retail jobs a good portion of our lives, and I've always worked at a job where My Favorite Things comes on, but it's never the Julie Andrews version.
No,
because
it's a cover.
I mean, clearly, like, it's probably an expensive song to license, specifically the Julie Andrews one, so you just have to have some, like, D-list singer doing the cover, and they're always garbage. Okay, so I was thinking about this week, that we're at, I think, a weird time of movie musicals. So we just saw both Wonka and Mean Girls.
Right.
And
secret musicals.
Secret musicals that are not advertised as musicals. Like, you realize that it's a musical as you're sitting in the movie theater. And my thing about both of those movies, like, I thought Wonka was fine. I thought Mean Girls was not good. But the music is not great. Like, it does not have the songwriting.
Wonka didn't come from the stage, so there's not, like, enough songs for it to be a stage musical. Mean Girls did, but I feel like they're trying to be a little bit more modern.
But what I'm saying is that there's just something about the songwriting from musicals of this time that I think that they're, I don't know. Did we just kind of lose like the passion for just musical songwriting?
I feel like they always wrote them like it was like, this is the last musical I'm writing. This is the final. I'm putting everything into this.
Yeah.
And they have like 20 more shows after that and they're all the same caliber.
But just like there's just something about all of the themes of these songs that just get stuck in your head.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't remember a single song from Mean Girls at all. Like it's evaporated from my brain.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't really care for the Mean Girls movie myself.
I get that they're just kind of different mediums for musicals, but still, though, I think that it's. I think that we're just at a weird place
with
songwriting.
The way that music evolves right now, it's like new Disney animated movies, right? The mm-hmm. Disney animated movies, the songs are not going to sound like songs from like Pinocchio or Cinderella.
They're
evolving with the times and they're like self-deprecating and they make funny jokes for the parents and like and the I don't know they try to make it as updated as possible. And I think Rodgers and Hammerstein, did they do Cinderella?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Which see, but that's the thing.
Also, something Julie like Andrews.
Cinderella, they made that shit three times. And even the Brandy one, which was as late as the 90s, still fucking slapped.
Look, top tier.
So good. Impossible.
Impossible.
Whitney's got that good wig on.
Oh, she looked so good. To this and day, still the sweatiest woman in show business.
I mean, but like, it's still, you can line it up with the original, the Julie Andrews and the Miss Scarlet. Rodgers and Hammerstein Cinderella starring Leslie Ann Warren.
Leslie Ann Warren, yep.
And it's the same music. It's the same story. It's the same book, I guess. Musical theater people. I'm using terms now. Sorry, guys. That's an industry term.
Book is like the script and
you know,
then,
you know.
Yeah, it's all the dialogue.
Right. I don't know what I'm trying to say. I think the thing is that these Rodgers and Hammerstein scores, these songs
they're built different.
They're built to last. Times they are changing. I don't think we're going to go back to this style of musical anytime soon, but
they need to bring back Technicolor.
Suffice it to say, Scott and I are not the biggest musical theater fans, so we don't really know what the heck we're talking about, but we know what we like. So we went to London, England, and what did we buy tickets for on the West End while we were there? The Phantom of the Opera. That's right.
Ooh.
We like the old standbys, the old faithful.
Old faithful.
So we were discussing at the beginning of the show Julie Andrews' kind of career in the mid-60s going from Mary Poppins to The Sound of Music. But here's the thing about Julie Andrews is that, like, I feel like the film career was just kind of a bonus. Like, she's been singing since she was a small child, like, performing for the Queen pretty much, since she was, like, a very young person. So she's been on that track with her voice at a very young age, very successful run on the stage in both My Fair Lady and Camelot. That, I mean, famous story, we can save that for our inevitable My Fair Lady episode, but missed out on the role of Eliza Doolittle after a very successful run on Broadway as Eliza, just because she wasn't a big star at the time. And then Disney, the story goes, was at Camelot, loved her so much.
Like Walt Disney himself.
Invited himself backstage and pretty much point blank offered her Mary Poppins.
Mm-hmm.
So it all kind of worked out that she didn't get to be in My Fair Lady, but she did Mary Poppins.
She got that Oscar.
And she won the Oscar. And she won the Oscar as The Sound of Music was in theaters making a lot of money. Because here's the deal about The Sound of Music. It made so much fucking money.
Oh my God.
Like, it like made money for the 60s that I was doing.
I think we might have done the same
thing. I was doing that today.
I translated it to modern day.
Okay.
So I did the inflation of the box office gross from 1965, $286 million.
Mm-hmm. That's what I have, which translates to $2.64 billion.
So a little bit under $3
billion.
And it cost them $8.2 million. And in the 60s, that would be $78.8 million today.
So a little under $100 million movie made $2 billion. This is making Black Panther money.
On a
Avengers Endgame
on a Marvel's budget.
Yeah, and then in my note, I just ended it with fucking insane.
Yeah, no, wild. That's crazy. We don't see these things happen anymore.
But I
it's
think
Julie.
That's funny that we did the same thing.
Yeah.
I mean, not the first time.
I was like, that's some coin.
I mean, also not the first time that the Von Trapp story had been on film, that there is a version that was produced in, like, Austria about the family that's played as more of a traditional movie from the 50s.
But it's from Austria from the 50s, so maybe we don't want to watch that.
but what I'm just saying is that this was kind of like... This was kind of a working IP you look into the background of this captain.
Well, because that's also the whole thing about this is that, like, they existed?
Yeah,
like,
it was a real family. Mm-hmm.
Maria Von Trapp is, like, a real-ass person?
It was me when I found out Laura Ingalls was real. I was like, that happened?
On your Little House journey that you're currently on?
Season 5.
Wow.
Poor Mary.
The fact that the Von Trapps are real, the Von Trapp family singers, but like I said, it's just become this kind of cultural, like, icon that everybody just kind of takes for granted, the story and this movie and this music and all of that.
With a lot of elements that I think that if done the wrong way can probably be unsufferable.
Mm-hmm. Are you talking about that? Who did it? Was it NBC or?
We can talk about the Sound of Music Live later. Yeah,
Carrie Underwood. I believe it was NBC.
But what I'm just saying is that kind of a lot of this material is just kind of schmaltzy.
Yeah,
that I think that it was a big point of discussion.
Oh,
with
people like
actors,
schmaltz in the '60s.
But I think that it was a point of discussion with actors like Christopher Plummer of that when he signed up for this. He's gone on the record of just saying, like, I don't know about this.
What kind,
like,
of Brady Bunch ass,
I don't know.
Holly, like, Hobby, Holly Lolly.
I think that he was very cautious of doing the movie just because he didn't want it to be, like, too sugary or schmaltzy.
Right.
But I think that his casting in the movie kind of reins it in, that it feels like more of a proper movie, especially when he's on screen.
Oh, you're talking about Georg?
Georg, yep.
What the hell kind of name?
But yeah, and I think that something that both him and Julie really worked on, that, you know, there's a lot of, like, cheese in this. There's a lot of corniness in this material, and we really have to rein it in.
Well, yeah, and I think Julie as Maria is really playing it, like, super wide-eyed, super, like, aw shucks. But it's still Julie Andrews, and
it's weird, too, because, like, to mention the time that it was, like, literally, like, almost, like, running at the same time as Mary Poppins.
Yeah.
That character of Maria, I feel like, is, like, a, like, completely polar opposite of Mary.
Yeah.
And I think that just speaks to, we already done known, Julie's, like, acting prowess.
The
because
range.
It's like, yeah, and I'm like, she's kind of naive and immature and just, like, does what she wants. And it's like, somebody's like, the sky is blue. And she's like, no.
Because Mary Poppins is very super nanny. Mm-hmm. She's very, like, she's coming in there. She's no nonsense.
Yeah.
She's just like,
Mama why?
Fuck you and fuck them kids.
Well, she wasn't there for the kids.
And I'm going to clean this house.
She was there for Mr. Banks.
She was there for to save Mr. Banks. Huh. And you're right. Does Maria come off maybe even younger than Mary Poppins? Like, would you even say, like...
I think the character is supposed to be, like, 23 years old.
Yeah,
so it's just early 20s.
Yeah. Yep. I'm just saying, it's just showing, you she's know, a the free range spirit. She's pulling. But yeah, I think the two of them together are pulling in some, like, some star power and some, like, acting, which is really good. And I do forget about that, with that the two characters of Mary Poppins and Maria are so kind of, like,
existing at the same time. It's like two totally different women.
Yeah. It's pretty wild, and it's pretty commendable. Even if maybe I could see people watching this, like, maybe someone younger who's never seen it just being like, what in the hell is, you know, just kind of not into it.
Running through the town, carrying her guitar, kicking her heels, screaming at the sky.
I mean, is this where we get the trope of, like, nuns with acoustic guitars? Like,
I think so.
From, like, Airplane.
The original Sister Act.
I mean, I think that you knew a lot of this movie from, like, the Airplane and Family Guy jokes, too.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Little Stewie.
Stewie did
Running Down the Road.
Confidence. Is that the name of the song, Confidence?
Yeah,
he did Confidence with the dress and everything. And
the dress,
hat,
everything.
And the guitar case. And I think that was for... I was just like, I think that Sound of Music when I watched it, just not knowing. But, I mean, that's it. Again, it just keeps coming back to this, like, this is so built into just, like, culturally.
Mm-hmm. Even if people haven't seen the movie,
yeah,
they know a little bit of a song.
Yeah.
They know a scene from like a parody in like Family Guy or something else like that, or Robot Chicken or something else that is
parodied. Have you ever Airplane. Been to the Hollywood Bowl to go see this?
No.
Very famous showing this thing along at the Hollywood Bowl.
Live,
and about 10 years ago, I drugged Pete and his sister Amy there.
Yeah, we went.
Yep.
And again,
I thought it was great.
Not Sound of Music family, but the two of us went and we had a great time.
Girl, those hills were alive.
They have, the hills were alive. Oh, European Vacation.
Yeah.
The hills are alive. That just that opening, iconic opening shot. Come on, everybody, you know.
Twirling on that hill. Everybody knows that.
Getting knocked over by that chopper.
There were no
drones in 1965 shooting this movie.
No, and that opening, because like I sat down and watched it today. I know you guys watched it last night.
Right before it gets to her.
But it's like there's like a solid 2 minutes of aerial shots.
Yeah.
And I'm like, God, these are probably so expensive to film. And
you're gonna see all
they're
of
like,
them.
You're gonna see every damn
you're gonna see
inch
all
of Austria.
Them. We rented that fucking helicopter and you're going
and
to
like,
watch all of them.
Yeah.
Julie will be here. Yeah. She's wait. We'll get to her.
Somebody's like on a walkie somewhere. Like, all right, run now,
run, spin.
I love those opening shots though because it really puts in
the build up.
Giant scope of this movie.
Mm-hmm. I do remember watching it for the first time, sitting down properly, watching it start to finish with you, Scott, and just thinking, this shit looks fake. I know it's not fake. It's real.
I had to look up and see. I was like, how many backdrops did they use? And they're like, hardly any. There's
okay, so,
a few scenes that are built in sound stages.
Yeah.
But they're like
but
interior
shots. But when
they're
out in Austria?
You can go to those hills.
With these
still.
Alps behind them?
Yeah.
I think that
you go out there and yodel to your heart's consent.
Well, you know what? I think that they used a scrim for the Von Trapp house when it looks over the river. I'm pretty sure that backdrop of mountains, that's a scrim. But it looks really good, though.
It's great.
Yeah. Like, it's great.
But when she's sitting down
budget.
With that acoustic guitar, teaching them Do, Re, Mi, and it's just these...
And their ugly little outfits.
These mountains are so big, and they're just these tiny little people. And it's just like, what the fuck? Like,
yeah.
Just makes L.A. look like a pile of puke.
Well.
Our mountains aren't very tall at all. Go to the Alps. It's iconic. And, I mean,
pretty.
We'll talk about their curtain costumes.
Please, I can't wait.
Curtain costumes. I kind of like them.
All right. Well, I mean, I think that probably an appropriate way to kind of get into the major beats of the movie. I have the vinyl right in front of me that I found out today. I got this from my grandma's house.
When did you wear that dress?
I got this from my grandma's house.
Show him that dress. When did you wear that? Never.
So, okay, I am going to point out.
Okay, listeners. So, Julie Andrews on the album cover has a pink dress.
And the children are wearing yellow. But I think this is her town dress when she first takes the kids out in the drape outfits.
Yeah.
Because those are the drape outfits.
Those are the drape outfits.
I think it's just the screen printing or whatever.
Yeah, the color, yeah.
I mean, this does look better than her like... brown and browner brown.
Well, the poor didn't want this dress.
No.
When we were watching The Sound of Music live, when we were watching The Sound of Music live, there's just something about God bless Carrie Underwood, like great, like Jesus take the wheel. Isn't that
Jesus take that role from her?
Isn't that
so.
Carrie Underwood?
I think so.
Yeah. That's
before he cheats. But there's just something about Carrie Underwood's delivery of, well, the poor didn't want this one. The poor didn't want this one.
Yeah.
Just compared to Julie
Andrews. It was a little high school play.
Like knocking that cheesy line
the
out
Channel
of the park.
School of acting.
Yeah. Like knocking that line out of the park and then the way Carrie says it, it's a little high school play.
No, that whole scene is so funny.
But so I have the vinyl sitting right in front of me, and I was texting with my mom today of that, do you remember seeing The Sound of Music when you were a kid? And she's like, yeah, we went to it in Kalispell, Montana, and it would have had to have been around 1965 when it came out, that my grandma like hauled the five kid, like my mom's five brothers and sisters, including her to the small theater in Kalispell, Montana to go see this movie. And then she said that they bought the score on, or like the soundtrack on vinyl. And I got this from my grandma's house. So this has to be,
that's the one,
my mom's vinyl that she would listen to when she was a little girl.
We have an heirloom here today.
We have an heirloom.
Listeners.
So yeah, so let's go through kind of the tracks that we'll talk about the main beats of the movie just from all the songs. So, I mean, The Sound of Music. I mean, GOAT right there. Like classic Julie Andrews and those motherfucking hills. So good.
I prefer the Ewan McGregor Moulin Rouge version. Just kidding.
I mean,
I'm going to go ahead and leave.
I'm going to go down each song and talk about the parodies.
But I mean,
that's when you know you're an icon, when you get down to the nitty gritty of almost mm-hmm. every song on this soundtrack has an iconic parody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In some movie or TV show and or something.
Some of them didn't even mean to be parodies. Yeah. They just were.
Yes. Including Carrie.
But yeah, I mean, just Julie performing that song when she's like, she's by the trees, when she's by the birch trees.
And this has given her 50 years of talk show anecdotes.
Oh, yes.
And I was getting knocked over by the helicopter, by the wind. And, you know what I mean?
Because everybody wants to hear those stories. That old fashioned. They've heard them before. They want to hear
those
stories.
Judy Garland, maybe fake, made up. We don't know how real this story is, but it's just a good story.
Yeah.
And, oh, you got Julie Andrews.
The person who's telling it.
Yeah. Ask her. What are you going to ask her about? You're going to ask her about this. The Hills Are Alive.
Or Mary Poppins.
Yeah, yeah. And
or Victoria if you're spicy.
Yeah, if you're nasty. But yeah, it's given her 50 years of a great talk show story. Mm-hmm. And it's like, what an intro.
Mm-hmm.
Those helicopter shots alone are just like, wow, this is beautiful. And we're watching it going, it probably looks pretty much the same, I would think. This just all that forest in Austria. I can't imagine. Is there like a Westfield now?
You can still like go to and get like that perspective, like those hillsides.
Yeah.
Because I go on deep dives. Like I've watched the movie like 18 times to look stuff up. I'm like, can I go there?
Yeah.
Yeah. You sure can.
Crazy.
If you can get to Austria.
Right. I mean, you know, it's a thing. You can walk there from Switzerland. They did.
Yeah, they sure did.
Well, the other way.
Well, we don't know if they made it. Well, we have to assume they made it. They were
all lived, right? Yeah.
I love all of the nun scenes in this movie. I don't care what people say. I love all of the nuns. How to solve a problem like Maria,
where all of your coworkers gather around to talk shit on you.
It's
how much they hate you.
It's Maria's like. It's not like a bitch track. It's Maria's
a diss track.
It's Maria's diss track.
It kind of is. Yeah. I had three notes around this part of the movie. I said the convent scenes always kind of depressed me. Because it's just a lack of color in there, but it's like a convent. I get it. You're not there for a glamorous lifestyle. Also, I was like, the nuns are talking mad shit about Maria.
Yes.
And Maria's saying out of permission, how dare she?
I mean, if somebody wants to come around and call me a Flibberty Gibbet, say it to my face. Is all I'm saying.
You better say it to my face. You better be prepared to pull that trigger if you're going to get a gun at me.
Not a Flibberty Gibbet. Come on.
A clown.
A clown. Okay.
Oh, so she looked like a Judy Justin Hooker?
So all of a sudden she's a Judy Justin Hooker. But okay. Did you parody of this? Charlie's Angels, not Full Throttle, the first Charlie's Angels. They go to the Playboy Mansion and disguised as nuns. In the movie, the Playboy Mansion is a convent.
Oh.
The Mother Superior is one Miss Carrie Fisher, and the nun habit that she's wearing is the exact habit style
that the nuns are wearing.
In the Sound of Music.
All of those folds and like Mother Superior.
It's all the folds.
All the folds. Yeah,
it's mm-hmm. Completely. It's the folds, and then she has, I remember these like, great gloves that go with it too, and they're like stoned. They're so
great. I believe the white drip, the part fashion. That covers a nun's habit is called a wimple, and so yes, the wimple with all the folds and creases.
Question about the lyrics to that song: underneath her wimple, she has curlers in her hair. How is Maria? How is Maria curling that hair?
Okay, we got to talk about this haircut on Miss Maria.
This short, cute, feminist, burn your bra pixie cut.
Sure, is it a pixie? It's not quite a Dorothy Hamill. It's shorter.
I think it's a little too long to be a pixie, but it's not long enough to be a bob.
Right. I don't know how flattering it is on her. I like the color.
It's okay.
Yeah.
She Marnie, kind of looks like Donny Osmond.
Did you know that Marnie? Did you know that Marnie Nixon from the voice of Eliza Doolittle from My Fair Lady is one of the nuns?
So the fake singing voice of Audrey Hepburn in My Fair Lady.
I mean the real singing
the
voice.
The real singing voice
of Audrey Hepburn. Right. But yeah, she's one of the nuns.
That actress. And that actress has done a lot of voiceover work in several different movies.
She did Deborah Kerr and Natalie Wood.
She did now, famously, she sang Maria in Sound of Music, correct? Not Sound of Music, in West Side Story, correct?
Yeah. Yes. I think that she just sort of had a knack for matching an actress's voice and making it pretty, like, viable.
But she was was often behind the scenes because she was a voiceover kind of always actress. In the rain. But
she gets some camera time.
And so she got some camera time in this
in
one.
Sound of Music, which I love.
Yes. So the nuns are rotted.
The nuns are rotted. They make
they're heavily opinionated on somebody.
They make
how long has Maria been in the convent at this point?
I mean, she's a novice, so she's new.
Yeah,
that's all I know.
Like, I mean, they think they know her well enough to have an opinion of her. So she's been there maybe a minute.
Yeah. So novitiate just means like she's not a full nun yet.
Got it.
That's how she can marry. Spoiler alert. That's how she can just leave.
What?
She's not quite married to God. She's still novitiate. So she got the call. The call. She got the call.
She put him on call
but
waiting.
She's a call. Yeah.
She's like, hold on, just one second. I have to get back to you.
She's in the waiting room listening to that that cool jazzy waiting room music.
She's like, if you could just have a seat right here, we'll go ahead and call you when you're ready.
Yes.
So she's sent to go be the governess of a sea captain with all of these kids.
A sea captain.
Mm-hmm.
Love it.
Love semen.
So, I mean, we discussed I Have Confidence. I love this number. I mean, this is kind of your classic musical number. I mean, it's right there in the title, is that it's confidence. Like, you see Maria build her confidence through the song. Like, I love that in classic musical songwriting.
It's a good character beat. It's giving us like where she is and where she's going.
I mean,
going,
it's the Wick in a Box number of the Sound of Music.
All right. We get, you know, and this scene is pretty classic. You know, it's like we said, it's the dress that everyone hates. Ugh. You know, she's coming off the bus and she's walking up to the house.
This scene is very well directed and cut together, because I was thinking when we were watching it of they would have had to have known where they were going to be for each line of the song, because how it's cut together.
Trains are leaving and cars are coming in and going out of shots and all that stuff. So those are really long setup.
Cute little shot
of her waiting there. Yeah. They're like, the trains go.
The cute little shot of Julie when she's when she kind of trips. Right. And they keep it in the movie.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And that...
She actually tripped.
The famous story is that she really did fall. And they're it's perfect because it's the
helicopter
about
came in there.
Cute little beat.
Yeah, the helicopter came back. She didn't fall the first time. I'm going to get her now.
I read that in this scene also, when she's skipping through the town, the real Maria Von Trapp is cameoed
somewhere in there
in that scene.
Oh,
I didn't point her out. But yeah, I thought that was pretty cool. That was also...
Yeah.
I was like... Wait, that's the real woman? Because when I saw this as a kid, like, I was just like, great musical, great imagination.
Right.
What a story. Nazis.
Who comes up
with
this stuff?
Who comes up with this? World War II? Who came up with this?
Yeah.
Real thing.
Okay. Is she older? I mean, I would imagine.
Oh, yeah.
Because the thing is, that was another thing that we started going down the rabbit hole of, like, who was the last Von Trapp child to die? How old were they? Like, how long did they live? It's a whole thing because there's so many kids. Mm-hmm. But we'll get to
that. Are any still alive?
I don't think so.
Oh,
Was a Von Trapp child that Maria had.
Yes, after the marriage.
After she was married to the captain, to Georg. Yes.
She got that locked in because now she got.
So the Von Trapp singer kids, they were too old, I guess.
So we meet the captain and we meet the kids.
Right.
I mean, do we just want to say anything quickly about the kids? I mean, I always think of the Lost in Space girl that I assumed was the same actress who is
her sister,
in The Birds, and which is Evie Swick from the 80s, but it is her sister.
Okay. So Scott is talking about the prolific character actress Veronica Cartwright, who is famously in Alien, the very first Alien. She's in The Witches of Eastwick. She is an amazing character actress in her own right. But she was a child actress. She starred in The Birds in 1960. But this is her sister. Not Veronica Cartwright, but it's her sister.
Angela Cartwright,
who starred herself on the original Lost in Space sitcom in the 60s.
Yeah, so these kids.
She got around.
Yeah, so these kids, we got Liesl, Louisa, Frederick, Kurt, Brigitte, Marta, and Gretel. I like that one of these actresses who's Heather Menzies, she has kind of cult movie cred because she was in both Piranha and which is a, which is like a
wait,
which
it has a title of the
it's
film.
Called
it's about snakes
and it's oh, it's sort of like an exploitation
it
movie
tires.
It's an exploitation movie from the 70s about snakes,
right?
So I kind of I like that she kind of has like cult movie cred.
Can you spell that for
that
me?
She went on to do
let's see Heather Menzies career oh, she did. She did a lot of TV. Yeah. TJ
she did,
Hooker.
She did a lot of work.
Dragnet, Room 222.
She was in the television series for Logan's Run.
No mm-hmm. work.
She's no longer with us. She has since passed away in 2017. But yeah, she. I mean, she of all of them, I think went on to kind of have a pretty big career after this movie.
And which one did she play?
She played Louisa.
So she's
the second oldest.
The second oldest
yep.
daughter. Okay.
Daughter.
The liar.
The mm-hmm. I was going to say she's the one that said that she was not Louisa.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Gotcha. Who plays the eldest daughter?
Her name is Charmaine Carr, who plays Liesel. I always kind of wonder, I don't want to be spreading gossip, but this actress would have been like in her early 20s. And it's just like, I want to know if anything happened with like Christopher Plummer.
Ooh.
Because I know that she's gone on the record of saying, oh, I had a crush on him
Liesel?
As we were making the movie.
Charmaine?
Who played like the oldest daughter.
Okay.
So I don't know. Did anything happen on set?
No.
They claim that nothing happened, but
no, nothing
happened. I mean, she was in her like early
20s.
I mean,
they want to keep it wholesome.
She was in her early 20s. Christopher Plummer was like in his mid-30s, so yep.
Okay, let's talk about Christopher Plummer in this movie.
Christopher Plummer, R.I.P., legend.
R.I.P.
I mean, Christopher Plummer worked until the day that he died. Like, he was making movies until, like, his last days with us.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And you said yesterday that he did not get an Oscar nomination until he was in his 70s,
he was
correct?
In his late 70s,
I late believe. 70s,
yep.
Girl.
Mm-hmm.
But he's got a pretty long and varied career. He, I mean, my big Christopher Plummer movie, he is General Chang in Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country. Yes, you heard that right, General Chang. He plays a Klingon. Don't worry. It's not cultural appropriation. that's one of my favorite. And that's the thing. This is a Star Trek movie in the 90s. They bring in Christopher Plummer to play like a big bad like Klingon like antagonist, and he really brings some like fucking credibility.
Like he brings it
to this movie.
Yeah,
yeah. It's so good. It's one of the better Star Trek feature films of the original cast, and he's killing it. He did some really great stuff with the character, with the Klingon makeup. He brought in a lot of great ideas, and he killed it. Now, is Georg Von Trapp in this movie
hot?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. I think the captain can get it.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
He can get it.
Question answered.
He can blow that whistle at me all day.
Do you not agree?
Mystery solved. I just feel like it's a product of the time that he's wearing a lot of makeup. But
yeah,
I think that's
but I don't care.
That's just the way the you know they made movies back then. But no, yeah, and it's another thing too. Sometimes when we are used to people looking a certain age, when we see them younger, I'm just like, do I think they're hot because they're genuinely attractive, or it's just because they look so much better than I'm
mm-hmm.
used to seeing them as like an older person. But no, he's a very good looking man as the captain
Von Trapp.
Yes.
Georg.
But yeah, I think that I think Christopher Plummer can get it in this movie. I mean, yeah. Christopher Plummer, like I mentioned at the top of the show, has been very vocal of kind of. He kind of thinks this movie's a bit much. Like, he thought it at the time of The Sound of Music. But I think that he always really swears by how much he loved working on the movie because he really loved working with Julie.
Sure.
Yeah.
Who wouldn't want to?
Yeah, who wouldn't want to? And like I mentioned before, I think that this performance really reels it in to being, I mean, I hate to use the word respectable, but I think for going something that's not like schmaltz, I think that he kind of delivers the goods.
Yeah. Yeah. I really enjoy Maria and the captain's kind of introduction to each other. Because, you know, she's playing this, like, wide-eyed, like, I've never been a governess before.
Kind of like classic Hollywood
look
chemistry.
Look at this mansion. Yep. Yeah. Like, where am I?
It's almost like Screwball,
and he,
too.
Yeah, and he comes in and all that nonsense with the whistle and all that.
And then she just completely dismisses it.
Yeah.
And I feel like he hadn't had anybody maybe challenge
oh,
him
no.
at that point. And no. so he was like, you know, hold on a second. And kind of just like, you know, taken back at the fact that she yeah. was like, yeah, no, we're not going to do the whistle thing.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, no.
That, I'm, that's okay. Mm-hmm. I do love. Okay. There, how many Von Trapp children are there?
Seven.
Six, seven?
Seven.
There's seven kids. Mm-hmm. So we are to understand that the Captain Von Trapp has seven individual whistles for each child, and he made up an eighth now for Maria.
Yeah, right? No.
So then, now Christopher Plummer, the man.
And she's got to learn all this?
Right.
Is this a paid position?
But now Christopher Plummer, the person, the actor, they give him this whistle.
Had
and they're probably just like, do it.
Make it up.
Make it up. Because.
Follow your heart.
Who doesn't, the youngest, Gretel. Gretel, the youngest, doesn't step forward the first time he does her whistle.
Like, rips into
and
it.
And then he does it again. It's not the same the second time.
Oh,
he's just like doop 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 doop. He's just letting it go.
He's playing an instrument.
He's just ad libbing, and it's great. I don't care. It's fine. It's fun because it's a really effective scene at the end of the day when you know with Mary's kind of Maria's reaction to we're not gonna be doing that. I don't. What whistles are for dogs and cats?
Yeah.
She's like,
he was like, this is going to be your call. Beep, 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 beep.
But you're right. She's not going to pay for this.
Yeah.
She got sent for the convent.
Yeah.
She's just free room and board.
Is this charity wear at this point?
Yeah. And maybe
she's there as punishment.
Some schnitzel every now and then.
All right. So I'm going down the track list. 16 going on 17.
Okay.
Rolf and Liesl's little dance in the gazebo.
All right.
The famous Sound of Music gazebo.
So fuck Rolf, first of all.
Yeah, first off, let's just
get
that
out of the way.
When you see this movie with a crowd at the bowl, you always boo whenever Rolf comes on.
Yep. You boo for little Rolf.
And now I have
little twink Nazi.
My aforementioned high school drama class performance. We did our best. I couldn't get a real Austrian, but I got the next best thing. My friend Ella was an exchange student from Frankfurt, Germany.
Ooh,
my senior year.
Close enough.
And so she's like, yeah, okay, we'll do it. Like, and so we couldn't do the actual like choreography from the scene where they're like jumping up on the benches and spinning around the gazebo.
Mm-hmm.
But we taught ourselves a waltz. We did our best.
Okay.
And her favorite part was the yay! At the end where she just like screams in the rain because he kissed her without her consent. Sorry, not okay. Wouldn't fly in 2024.
Trigger warning.
TW,
you guys. Scott, you mentioned the famous gazebo. Is this something that's like in a studio somewhere?
I mean, I think that there was a gazebo on the property that was actually like standing because my aunt got pictures of it. Because here's the thing is that if they have like the Sound of Music tour that you can do around this area that you can take pictures
in
of all
Austria?
Of these locations.
Wow.
And I believe that the place where this house is, the actual house, there is a gazebo there. But then, of course, they had to build it on a stage.
Right. Mm-hmm. They recreated it.
This goes right into the My Favorite Things number.
Merry Christmas.
Ho, ho, ho. Yeah, this is a fun one.
Yeah, it's cute.
I like this song.
So, okay. So my whole thing was like, Liesl came in hot at the beginning. Like, I'm Liesl, I'm 16, and I don't need no damn governess.
Yeah.
But then all of a sudden, she's like, okay, we cool.
But can you lie for me?
Right. It's because she came in the rain after, like, you know, her clandestine
but like Maria's
rendezvous.
Maria, like, right off the bat is kind of being a mother to all of these children.
Yeah.
Too. Yep.
Right.
These unruly children, no mother running around.
Well, yeah, because we get the stuff where they're like trying to prank her and the frog and the pine cone and I'm sorry.
Spiders?
I've never sat on a pine cone, but I feel like
I know a kid in elementary school that went to kick a pine cone and he slipped and is in a coma.
What?
Oh, Jesus.
Because, like, he kicked it and it, like, rolled.
And he's, it slipped. His foot didn't kick it, and it acted like a roller skate, and totally threw his legs out from behind him. I don't know if he's still in a coma. But he was when I was 5.
Wow.
Yeah. 5, 6 years old.
You guys, don't play with pine cones.
Don't kick pine cones. Don't put them in your governess's chairs. Yeah. Just stay away from pine cones.
Come on. I mean, they fall out of these coniferous trees.
Yeah.
Some pine cones are really big. I would be, you know. But okay, so we see all this, you know, of them like trying to prank her and all that. But like, she kind of like goes in and
oh, she gets checks them
all.
Them.
She checks them all.
Yeah, she makes the children cry.
Yeah.
She makes half of them start to cry. And she just isn't eating there.
And I'm sitting there like, Dawn, get her, girl. Get her.
Drag her.
Get her, Jade.
I tried my hardest to look up what they were eating in this scene because it looks so interesting. Mm. It was like, it looked like cold cuts stuffed with like cream cheese on a plate. And I was like,
oh, geez.
What is this? Couldn't find it.
Oh, man.
Don't know anything about Austrian cuisine.
60s but that, food in general. You
but
don't
that dinner
know.
Was before 16 going on 17.
Right. I'm just talking about because I had mentioned her relationship with Liesl.
Yeah.
And Liesl warming up to her.
But I mean, my favorite things is a very important part of the story. It's because when she really warms up, like when all the kids warm up to her.
Oh, right, yeah. Right. They're all like, she's not a threat.
Oh, yeah. Oh, this,
okay, you can
oh, this lady's fucking rad.
So there's something to be said.
Verbatim, that's what they said.
Child actors and like really Hollywood actory child actors that we're just like, we hate like a precocious kid who just like knows too much and like talks like a grown up or whatever. Very like Modern Family like style of acting. This little girl who plays the youngest, Gretel. Oh my God.
Adorable.
Oh my God.
So cute.
So cute.
Little gumdrop.
So good. She's just like little angel face. Just like she's great in every scene. Yeah. She's
adorable.
Yeah. So I think they did a really good job with this, the younger kids, especially. Yeah.
I don't like kids, but that one's pretty solid.
The Lost in Space girl, too, I feel like she's kind of like a little bit more of a know-it-all. Like, she feels like she's a smarter one.
You could talk some mad shit with
really
that
dark
one.
Hair. Yeah, she's doing some good. She's doing some good work.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's some that get lost in the shuffle. There's some filler queens in there.
The two boys.
The two boys.
The only two boys.
Filler queens, yeah.
Well, Maria can't even remember Kurt's name at first. She says, and God bless
God bless Kurt.
Yeah.
What's his name?
She's like, oh, yeah, what's his name? Kurt. God bless Kurt. She kind of slips it in there.
Oh, my God. He does have his high note in Goodbye.
Goodbye! Okay, so Pete.
Yes.
When we go to Quads in Palm Springs.
Right.
I remember the first time we went to Quads with... my best friend, it was when we went to Palm Springs with Jamie, and we went to Quads for the first time when it was called the Spur Line.
It was called Spur
Line. I remember us being in the bar when, I can't remember if it was Do Re Mi or My Favorite Things. I think it was my Favorite Things.
No, it was Do Re Mi because I remember her putting her hand on her head and one of the guys, because was it the night that the Palm Springs like musical theater people came in?
Yes.
Yeah, it was that night. And one of them who was in full costume at the high note at the end of Do Re Mi, he put his hand on his head the way she does to hit that note.
I remember the entire bar fucking losing it.
Yeah, it was lit.
At that song.
It was litty titty.
It was
screaming.
It
at
was
the top of their
madness.
Lungs. Yeah.
But okay, so what I wanted to say about My Favorite Things of the end of the song when it transitions to like the re-rise of her going through Salzburg with all of the kids.
Mm-hmm.
There is something about that moment when she's looking at the curtains and then she's measuring it with her hands.
Right.
And then it goes right into the crescendo of like My Favorite Things being re-rised. And you see all of the kids coming out of the gate wearing all of the drape clothes.
Hideous
like,
outfits.
Oh my God. Like that moment gives me chills to this day of just how effective it is.
I just want to know how she took ugly drapes and turn them into 7 uglier outfits overnight.
She made full lederhosen.
She would have had to go in and either wake the children or take their measurements in their sleep.
Yeah.
Because
she's
can't
that
do guesswork
good.
Like that.
She's that good.
You can't do... You
fittings.
Can't.
Yeah. Fittings, all that.
But like, I'm just like, God, it's like that. I want to call it a baby shit green.
Right.
That color, paisley print. Yeah.
Those prints are also very 60s, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely a product of its time, but
And, like, how many windows did her room have? Because Kurt had a full coat and shorts. Frodrick had the lederhosen. The girls all had dresses in different styles. That's a lot of fabric.
Yeah.
That's a lot of fabric.
Yeah.
But there's just something cute. About there's just something about magical, of how the score swells that it still does it for me. Like it's a fucking moment that when those kids like exit that gate and you say, "Oh, bitch, she did it,"
and they're living.
She made all of those clothes, and they're gonna go
they
like
we're just gonna throw those curtains away.
Yep.
Yeah.
But yeah, all of the scenes in the town too.
Well, didn't the captain say something about like, well, you better, oh, you know how to make a dress, then you better make yourself another dress.
I was gonna say, because the I don't remember Frau housekeeper. I don't remember her name. Yeah. The character.
Frau Farbissina.
Yeah, her. She brings three bolts of fabrics to Maria, and I don't think she decided to use a single one of them, because what she was wearing in the next scene is not what she was provided. She was wearing like a burlap shirt a la Shrek and some kind of like, you know, overall dress. Sure. Very simple, very, you know, farmer's wife.
Another
one
the poor didn't want.
She's a modest woman. She's a woman of God. I get it. But did she find a potato sack under the bed? Make something out of that?
I mean, the captain said, "You're going to sew a new dress." She said, "You want to see a new dress? I'll give you seven. Not for me. For your kids who you don't even want to.
Everybody dragged her about that dress.
Outside.
The poor didn't even want that dress.
And what was it, Kurt, who said, "My name's Kurt, and I think that's the ugliest dress?" Yes.
No, that was Kurt, right?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And he says, "No, Baron Schrader's was
the ugliest.
Was the ugliest.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Burn that dress, girl. Burn that dress."
Oh man! But now we're gonna get to Doremi.
Yeah,
Doremi, so good.
It's so great.
There's a lot of setups in this song. There's costume changes. Mm-hmm. They're on a horse-drawn carriage. They're juggling tomatoes. We're, you know, playing guitar.
On the hillside.
On the hills. Like, there's a lot of setups and payoffs. And I was like, is it a new day? Because they changed.
I think it's over the course of a few days.
But then when it ends and we come back, we meet
and
the
Baroness.
And
they're on the boat. They're back in the ugly outfit.
Well, this is like the fifth day.
She does refer to them as play clothes.
Exactly. Yep.
So like, we're going to go and do some real rough and tumble shit. Maybe follow
the
river.
Put on the drapes, kids. We're hitting the streets.
All right. So this is a good opportunity to talk about Eleanor Parker serving Major Cunt as the Baroness.
Her eyebrows are so good.
This character and this actress's delivery is so good.
All right.
Eleanor Parker, that people kind of forget that she was the fifth actress in the very famous Best Actress lineup from 1950, that was Gloria Swanson and Bette Davis, Judy Holliday in Born Yesterday, that Eleanor Parker was also in the category that year
for
a women in prison movie called Caged. Yep.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
All right. But here she's the Baroness. And, okay, explain her and Georg's relationship.
I mean,
the layperson.
They had to have known each other for a couple months at least. Like, I don't think they...
She's trying to get in there.
I think that he's gone to visit her numerous times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So there is sort of a courtship involved.
Okay.
I think that she's good Judy's with his brother, with Uncle Max.
I love Uncle Max.
Is Uncle Max like a real Uncle Max?
The coded gay character.
Air quotes Uncle Max.
Mm-hmm. Give me all the disgusting little details.
Played by Richard Hayden. The Baroness kind of has her eye on the captain.
Right.
That she is gonna, she's going, I mean, she has a lot of money, so she's not really marrying for a lot of money.
Right.
I mean, I almost think that the captain probably, maybe he needs her money more. I don't know.
Oh, maybe.
And I kind of like that she's not like traditionally like evil to the kids or to Maria.
Yeah, she doesn't
outright.
Give like parent trap stepmom.
That's
vibes.
Where I'm going. Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
Because like had to look up, like, since we're talking about her real quick, I'm like, is she a villain?
Right.
But like, she's just so desperate to be married again. Like she wants to be married again, but you know.
In this society, she needs a husband.
I mean, it's...
Apparently.
Your husband died?
I mean, she's also...
How dare you?
Yeah.
I mean, she's also playing... She's also playing really good mind games with Maria. Later
that's,
in the movie.
Okay, that's yeah. the thing. Okay.
Later on, yeah.
Maybe I retract my statement.
Well, that's why I had to look up, is she a villain?
Yeah.
But, you know, she... Spoilers... comes around and actually realizes, oh,
right.
he doesn't love me.
Yeah.
And she loves him.
Right.
And I can't stand in the way of this. So she very, you know, peacefully, like, you know, bows out, folds her hand, and exits gracefully, goes mm-hmm. back to Vienna and enjoys her sausages.
Yeah.
But yeah, I agree. And I like that the movie doesn't go too hard on her.
Yeah.
Like, I think that they're
she's
able,
an enjoyable character.
They're able to have this actress have a lot of fun with this character, but they never go into like villain territory with her.
Right. Like when she's playing with the, when they banish Maria later on, again, spoiler, and she's playing ball with the kids and it's this weird number game.
Yeah, I can't figure it out. I'm dyslexic.
Everybody has a number and then number. You just like throw it to them.
But you call out the number first or somebody calls out a number and whoever, I don't know.
She doesn't know
but
her
she's
number
just
from her elbow.
Flinching at every like throw of the ball. She's just like, ah, it's cute. It's cute.
I mean, she's definitely like, going to be sending these kids to like a Swiss boarding school. There,
yeah, she definitely
the
messages
famous,
that.
The famous Swiss boarding schools.
Yeah, yeah.
And
but
Eleanor,
I'm saying she at least she tries to play with the kids and she's not just like, ugh, get away from me.
And
she's
Eleanor, not cut out for it, I don't think.
No,
she just wants to be a wife, not a mother.
And right. Eleanor Parker's delivery of this voice. It's so like sensual.
Mm-hmm. Okay, all right.
Like, what were you wearing that night with the captain when she's like,
he
when
couldn't
she's,
take his eyes off of you.
He couldn't take his eyes off of you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well,
but yeah, she's so
make
good.
A very handsome couple.
Mm, that big party, okay, are we going to get. Is it good? But what's the big song? At
I mean,
party?
We.
Goodbye.
I mean, we should probably talk about
our feeder saying
the lonely goat herd.
The lonely
we get to
goat
that.
Herd.
All right.
I don't know about you guys, but when Gwen Stefani came out with "Wind It Up," that song had me in such a chokehold, and I was like, "This is just the Sound of Music. She's just doing the lonely goat herd. There's nothing unique about it, but it's so good."
Hey, Ari did the same thing.
Yeah,
well,
that's true.
And Ari got burned. I don't know if Gwen did.
Well,
no,
isn't the whole thing with Ariana Grande and that song is that she pretty much makes nothing off that song.
Yeah.
Like everything goes to like
because it was so much
goes to the estate.
So much of the sample.
Mm-hmm.
Of my
like,
favorite
too
things.
Too
yeah.
much of the sample is in yeah. the song. So the court ruled. No, you're not going to really make any money.
Did they even go to court over it?
They
or
did, yeah.
okay, I
because
wasn't
because they ruled on it.
Sure,
like, she got it.
I wasn't sure if that. That they just had to...
Or maybe it was not a court of
I think,
arbitration
well,
or something.
I always thought that when they were just making the song, they pretty much just threw their hands up in the air that this
no.
is... They're not going to make any money
no,
off
it
this.
Was like an arbitration. It was
okay.
like a ruling saying...
Well,
like,
now I'm curious how Gwen did because...
Right, I never...
She...
Yeah.
Do you guys see the video for that one?
Not in years.
It's literally she almost... Not shot for shot creates that scene from The Sound of Music, like when they're
with
doing
the
with the puppets. But she is sewing outfits out of drapes and like running around. It's like a Do Re Mi scene,
okay.
but it's the lonely goat herd, and she's using the actual lyrics.
Yeah,
for like she starts high on the hill, like she starts the song
yeah.
with the damn
and the
lyrics.
Glenn voice.
Yeah. And there's like the you know the orchestra hits and the little flourishes from
yeah.
the song in it. God, it's catchy. I like it.
No,
but then
yeah.
it just makes me want to listen
because
to
because it's a good song.
The Lonely Goat Herd.
And also,
and it's
it
the
has,
only yodeling I
and
can
And also,
do.
Yeah. it has puppets.
Yeah. Everybody loves
everybody
puppets.
Everybody loves puppets.
Everybody loves puppets.
I mean, these aren't just like puppets. These are proper marionettes.
These
yeah.
are marionettes.
Which
are
fucking awesome.
Impossible to like...
I looked it up. They
to
hired,
marionettes.
They hired like a specific team to
okay.
do the puppeteering
was
for that
Bob
scene.
Was it Bob Baker?
It was...
I don't think it's Bob Baker.
It's probably not Bob
I should have written it down. It was two
Bob
very relevant really. Puppeteers at the time.
Sure.
But because I was like, are they really doing that? Because it looks like they're really doing it.
My favorite is the cunty milkmaid with the yellow hair and the
uh-huh.
like really, really, really tan skin.
Mm-hmm.
She's my favorite puppet.
I like Mama.
They're so good.
But yeah, some of those,
yeah.
those puppets, like, I swear at least $1 million out of the budget for that film went into the puppets.
Into, yeah. Like,
the tuba player's little cheeks little, puff up.
The little balloon
and their
cheeks.
Eyebrows go up and down mm-hmm. and their eyes shift side to side. It's like.
Yeah, and the goat's like moving
too
around.
Too much budget.
There's just
goes
something
into that.
About marionettes, how it's just that weird uncanny valley thing where they make expressions and they look around and you're like, that shouldn't be that.
Like someone created the first marionette and went, yeah, that's a human.
Yeah, it's crazy. And there's and the expressions on them in this scene are so nuts.
It's like,
I love that we're just like, oh, and we are to believe that these six-year-olds
are puppeteering
that
all
Maria
of them.
Took a yep. took a ragtag bunch of children
yeah.
and taught them excellent
yeah.
puppeteering skills enough to put on
yeah.
a fully beginning, middle, and end story. Yeah.
And they're just like, God damn it, Gretel.
Yeah,
change the background.
Gretel blew up damn corn.
One job.
You had one job and you blew foam in my face.
Yeah, but no, Lonely Goat Herd, this scene is, it's so charming.
I mean, especially for a song. I mean, especially yes. for a song that you could probably just be throwaway.
Right.
And just like.
Yeah. It provides nothing to the
plot. Who cares
not
at all?
It's goat, just for funsies.
Yeah. Goat Herd.
It's a shits and giggles.
Like, yeah.
But I mean, it fucking slaps.
Yeah.
Like all of these
I mean,
songs.
Is it
yep.
there to endear the kids to the Baroness?
I think it's supposed to progress the relationship with the kids and Maria. I yeah. love the Baroness when she sits down when they give the guitar to
Georg
Christopher Plummer yeah. that she's just like, well,
what
I didn't bring my harmonica.
Well, fuck my
oh yeah, yeah, her little one-liners, her little snotty little comments.
Yeah,
it's like she's like, this is almost too wholesome for me.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She's got to knock it down a couple notches.
Like a moment where the Baroness can sort of be like the audience member,
sure,
observing all of like how crazy all of this is.
Yeah.
Is Edelweiss right after this?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, before we get to Edelweiss. Okay. So when the kids fall into the river and they come out and they're all soaking wet,
yes,
and Georg is like, what in the hell?
Big moment.
Maria, you're
fucking... my children been climbing
pack
trees?
Your bags. Yep. I don't want these kids climbing
big
no damn
between
trees.
Them. Yep.
Pack your bags, bitch. You're out of here. You're fired. And then we just hear the dulcet tones off in the distance
of
them
the
singing Do Re Mi.
No, they're
singing the sound of music.
They're singing the sound of music.
Yeah.
It's wild.
And that's what's his head? That's what's his head's curl? That's what's his face? God,
that's your filler queen.
That's yeah. the filler queen right there. It's angelic.
Like
it's
choir,
the most
Catholic choir boy.
Yeah, it is the most angelic sounding version of this song. A completely, I think it's a cappella. I think Liesl's playing guitar.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But these kids all know instruments. But it's harmonies, house down, boots. Harmonies.
I mean, they learned the song for the Baroness.
Yeah, yep. Yeah. And that's when Georg is just like, what in the hell?
And he's like,
happening?
I know this song too.
It awakens yeah. him because it's something that his wife would have sung.
Right.
So this is like a famous Austrian, like, song.
Yeah.
Is it really, though?
No.
Yeah.
I don't
oh.
really but I think that's the idea,
yeah,
is that
like,
I think that his wife, like, would sing
standard.
The song.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's an Old Faithful. But yeah, I just, I had to bring up that version of Sound of Music and Kurt's little, like, his little ad-libs. Yeah, okay, Edelweiss.
I was reading that Edelweiss was one of the last songs that the song Edelweiss was written for the musical and is little known in Austria, so it was not, like, a famous song.
Okay, so that was the one that was written for the musical.
Yeah, it was written for the musical, and the song was the last that Oscar Hammerstein wrote before he died, August of 1960. So it was one of the last songs that he wrote.
Wow.
Yep.
Okay. He wrote it in 1960. They didn't make this movie for another 5 years.
I mean, it was just coming off Broadway, though.
Oh, true.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Okay. Edelweiss, not my favorite song in the show. It's fine.
It's nice.
It's nice.
It's sweet.
It's a yeah. slower one. It's mm-hmm. it's a sentimental song.
It's sweet at the end of the movie, too, when they're in front of the crowd.
Escaping right. the regime.
Yes. Mm-hmm. For which the radicals are trying to get free.
The woke left, I tell you what.
My God. Yeah, that's all I have to say about Edelweiss.
Yeah, I mean, what did you want to say about the party scenes? Before the Baroness helps Maria pack her bags.
That
sure.
Parlor? I brought up the party.
Need help packing?
Yeah.
No, that gallery... people don't have galleries in their homes to host extravagant, lavish parties anymore.
That's like old Europe money.
At the beginning of the movie,
and she's in there like pretending to bow, yeah, and she's being all fancy. It's like foreshadowing the big party that's going to happen. But yeah, people don't do that anymore, and I think that's what's wrong with this country.
Right. We don't have,
or at least that country.
We don't have a salon anymore. Yeah. In our house.
A parlor room.
I could use a salon and a parlor and a gallery. Yeah.
And a day bed to pass out on.
One day. You mean the party full of senior citizens?
Yeah. Do they not have any young friends? Yeah. No. I mean, both the Baroness and like the captain are pretty like young and hot.
Yeah.
Well, she doesn't know anybody there.
She doesn't know anybody
from Vienna.
Yeah. Oh, true.
And she's like, oh, it's a party for her. You can introduce me to all your friends. Yeah.
Right, right, right. And then this is where we get goodbye.
Every AARP member in that countryside of Austria showed up that night.
Yeah, I mean,
so long, and then one Nazi.
Our theater saying goodnight. Yeah. I mean, this is another move. This is another one that
another parody
Seth MacFarlane has done on Family Guy.
In its full entirety.
Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, Seth.
Oh, they also did Lonely Goat Herd, where they hoisted up Joe like a marionette.
Oh, Jesus. Oh my God!
I mean, Seth MacFarlane loves some Sound of Music.
Say, he does. Thing that he just really loves it. So
he loves Sound of Music. He loves those old, big, extravagant, like, you know.
He probably texts with like Julie Andrews on a regular basis.
Yeah, they're best friends.
Yeah,
they're besties. He's saying besties.
He sang what's that song? Pure Imagination from
Willy Wonka
with Barbra Streisand.
Oh my gosh.
If you guys haven't heard that cover,
wow.
That's really good. I know this is a far segue.
He has several albums.
He's got a good scene voice, and he held up with Babs pretty well.
I thought he just did the one album, but then no, he's got quite a few.
Yeah.
Good for him.
Mr. Broadway.
You better work Seth MacFarlane.
You better work it.
I met him at a bar once.
I love that scene with the Baroness and Maria of when she's going up to change. Like, the Baroness is kind of, she's seen them dancing. So, the wheels are turning in her head.
I thought she was being sweet.
So, the wheels are turning in this head of that
women,
I'm going to be playing some mind games with this woman.
Now, where is that lovely little thing you were wearing the other evening when the captain couldn't keep his eyes off you? Couldn't keep his eyes off me? Come, my dear, we are women. Let's not pretend we don't know when a man notices us. Here we are.
The captain notices everybody and everything.
Well, there's no need to feel so defensive, Maria. You are quite attractive, you know. The captain would hardly be a man if he didn't notice you.
Baroness, I hope you're joking.
Not at all.
But I've never done a thing to...
You don't have to, my dear. There's nothing more irresistible to a man than a woman who's in love with him.
In love with him?
Of course. What makes it so nice is he thinks he's in love with you.
But that's not true.
Surely you've noticed the way he looks into your eyes. And you know, you blushed in his arms when you were dancing just now.
What was that picture that I sent you earlier? Where's my phone?
Oh yeah, now you can pull up the notes that you took.
I sent Scott this photo earlier of the Baroness in that scene
when she's watching them dance.
When she's watching them dance, and it says the Baroness Schrader breakup technique.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Oh, I'm on the thread. I have that picture.
When she's like helping her pick out the dress, like what was that?
She's like, what was that dress? He couldn't take his eyes.
Charming little dress that you were wearing that he couldn't take your eyes off of you. And there's just something about her that like. Sultry delivery
she's
of
salty.
Eleanor Parker. That like
she's
sultry.
But let's talk about this gown that she's wearing though at the party
scene.
I love this gown.
It doesn't look very period.
No. Oh, with the big shoulder?
Yeah, the big like a big flourish at the shoulder, opera gloves. It's like hugging her body. It's great. I love this look on her. Mm-hmm. Is it Dior? It's not Dior because the 50s Dior would have been doing the new look. I don't know, but it's a beautiful look.
It's great.
I love it. Mm-hmm. I love
it. It gives me Zsa Zsa Gabor.
Very much.
Very Zsa Zsa Gabor.
The way
sisters.
That her hair was fixed too, it gave me Gabor sisters.
Very Zsa Zsa and Eva Gabor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right, we should probably talk a little bit about the character that Peggy Wood plays, the Mother Superior. I mean, we got to talk about the moment of when she takes Maria aside.
What is it you can't face?
Oh, my God. I think that I first heard about this from Mike Myers when he was doing a commentary on, like, Austin Powers. That I think it's in The Love Guru where there's this line. But I think that he talks about it on the Austin Powers commentary of what is it you can't face?
What is it you can't face?
Yeah, I was not familiar with this as like just kind of a running joke or running gag. I feel like I first saw it on Drag Race.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I mean, I went back and checked because Rue had brought it up.
Yeah.
And I think that way back in the day, on their podcast,
okay,
Rue had brought it up.
What's the tea?
Yeah, that's what it's called. Mm-hmm. And I was like, no. And I went back and I rewatched the scene and I was like, oh my God, she calls her a cunt face.
Cunt face.
It's so good. It's so good. I will find myself walking down the street and I'll just turn to a random stranger. What is it you cunt face?
But it's one of those things that exists as a pre-social media meme,
yep. Uh-huh.
Right? But it is mm-hmm. a meme because that's like historically like the definition of a meme. Like,
well, there's another one from the movie too that I want to bring up that I thought was funny because it wasn't a line that jumped out at me uh-huh. when I first watched it, but then it like hit me like a train. It's after Maria leaves and it was after they're playing like that weird number ball game.
Oh,
with
yeah.
the Baroness.
Yeah.
And they go up to Uncle Max and he says, what's the matter with all you gloomy pussies?
a line from a very different time,
are you
Mitch.
Sure? Yes.
Gloomy it's pusses.
So, I'd be like,
because puss is like a face, mm-hmm. like pusses. Not
well,
pussies.
It sounds like he says gloomy pussies. So now I'm just going to be like, oh, don't mind her. She's got a gloomy pussy.
Gloomy pussy. We're gonna have to,
but that's right up there with cunt face. Oh,
but yeah, but Pete, God. You're right. I mean, before like internet memes were a thing, this was one of those things that if you know, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and just something that gay men would snicker at. I remember when we saw this at the Bowl. Mm-hmm. That I mean, I was familiar with the line, and you could tell.
I bet everybody was like,
people.
Oh my God.
if you knew, and you laughed during this scene because I mean, it's a very sincere moment. Too.
It is.
Yeah. Oh, it's super sincere because like Maria has been back at the Abbey for what, at least like a week at this
the
point.
Kids
or something.
Like, yeah. The kids have
visited.
They've been turned away.
To anybody. She's in total like solitude and doesn't want to talk to anybody.
She's going through like probably an existential crisis of being a nun because I mean she's supposed to be married to like JC. She shouldn't be like after
Christ. Yeah.
She shouldn't be like. Going after the captain. And
that's
I mean,
true.
That's what really scared away with the Baroness was kind right. of the Baroness really like vocalizing it.
Yeah.
And that's what scared away.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It's like at this point, it's like she can't be a successful governess. She doesn't know if she's going to be a successful nun. And then Mother Superior calls her a cunt.
What is it you can't face?
Gold.
And it's like
bottle it and sell it.
Does she say? Yeah, I think she's
can't.
Can't.
What is it you can't face?
Can't face.
All right, we'll give it a rest.
Sure. If we must. What song is next?
So I mean, this is Climb Every Mountain. I mean, this is always the part of. The VHS that my sister and I would probably fast forward at. I mean, it's a very nice moment with like Peggy Wood. She got an Oscar nomination for this movie.
Yeah, it's a great song.
But I mean,
song,
it's kind of, it's one of those moments that it's like.
Mother Superior got an Oscar nomination for this movie?
Yeah, Peggy Wood was nominated for Best Supporting Actress.
Wow.
It's kind of like Charlie Bucket's mom song in Willy Wonka, Girl Charlie.
Skip.
That's always like the most fast forwarded scene.
Yeah,
of that movie.
It's because it's so long that I know that particular song, and she's just singing over sad laundry for like 20 minutes. It's just not an interesting.
And also for
scene.
This song, there's something kind of sinister about how the scene is shot because it's dark and you see their shadows in the back.
Okay, yeah.
Oh.
Oh, I didn't notice
at
that.
The, at
is
the
it
memory?
Like shadows of
always,
the nuns?
I always notice the shadows of both Peggy Wood and Julie Andrews on the wall.
Oh, it's not it's Satan. Their shadows. Mm.
Yeah.
Could it be
their bites in his blood? It's okay.
All right.
But I mean, Maria von Trapp realizes that she's in love with the captain. She's given the good to go from Mother Superior, and mm-hmm. she goes back. I mean, I think that she really goes back for the children. And then she has her little moment in the gazebo with Christopher Plummer where they sing their something good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Something well, she had to good. Go back. She did, you know, she kind of did do a little bit of like an Irish exit. She just kind of bounced out.
Yeah.
Something Good by Herman's Hermits.
I guess that when they were filming this scene with Julie and Christopher, that they kind of had the giggles in the scene and they couldn't get through it, and it really pissed off the director.
Oh,
that they
really?
Had to take like a 2-hour lunch for them to collect each other.
Oh,
and
God.
Then I think that when they came back, they had to reblock it, that you got them in that really nice silhouette. So, mm-hmm. I mean, it all worked out because they got that beautiful shot, but yeah.
I know those beautiful shots.
I know that this scene, like both of these actors were having trouble getting through it. Yep.
Well worth the effort. It's a great scene.
Mm-hmm.
And then after Climb Every Mountain, intermission.
Classic movie intermission.
Yep.
I mean, movies are becoming longer now. I think that it was talked about that Flowers of the Killer Moon probably should have had some sort of intermission for
Wait, am
it
I right?
Theater.
Is it there or was it somewhere else? No.
Oh, no. The intermission is when she leaves.
This is side one and side two of the record.
So, the intermission is when she leaves.
Yeah. Yep. Climb Every Mountain is the last track on side one, but mm-hmm. it is after she leaves the Abbey, then it's intermission.
Okay.
Then it picks up with everyone's like, oh, she's not talking to anyone. The children got to try to visit her, and the nuns are like, bye.
I mean, it kind of goes into the processional and Maria in the Maria chorus, because I love that when Maria gets married, these nuns are still roasting her as she's walking down the aisle.
That whole wedding scene,
they're still with
the most
they're still with this diss track.
Depressing wedding I've ever seen. I hold on. I took this picture because I thought it was funny during this scene. The nuns are all just observing from behind locked gates, like they're not allowed to in the wedding, but they're still gonna sing, and maybe that's why they're still talking trash, because they weren't let in.
They didn't get a good seat.
No. Standing room only.
Yeah. But again, this is the part of the movie where me, the casual
you kind of drift off a little bit.
Yeah, I'm just like, we saw the good stuff. We saw the songs that I wanted to see. All the
now we
numbers.
Get to the Nazi stuff.
Yeah.
Now we get to the Nazi
this
stuff.
This is where Phoebe's grandma would turn it off, and mm-hmm. she didn't. And she never really saw the rest mm-hmm. of the movie.
Oh, I forgot about that. Yep.
Yeah. That's a whole.
I mean, this is probably when I was a kid and I was watching it. Maybe it wasn't over two nights. My mom was just like, you gotta go to bed. So it's like they made it safe. To like Switzerland, the end, and then
what happens? They're fine.
They're fine.
They're
good.
Yep. They're fine. Good night.
They got married, so they lived happily ever after.
I do like this half of the movie because I do find it suspenseful.
Mm-hmm.
I like there's like political intrigue of them trying to get away, and the Nazis
it
like
takes
tracking them down.
Shift.
Yep.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I mean, it was dark. Shift. It was dark times in Austria in the 1940s.
World War II is crazy
to say. Yeah.
I mean, it's that point of just Austria of that you're seeing all this shady shit coming from the country next door, and it's seeping into your country.
And they think that you should also be their country.
Well, there's some imagery in this movie that's pretty fucking wild. For like a family,
especially
you know,
when a lot of
holiday
Heil Hitler's peppered
musical
throughout this movie.
Heil Hitler's all over the place.
With
he
the
pulls
proper
down,
heel click and everything.
He pulls down the Nazi flag and tears it up and gives it to Uncle Max. And Uncle Max is like, sorry about it.
And I think that there
he
was
doesn't
still,
care either way.
I think I was reading too, as they were making it, there was still, I mean, even in Austria, as they were filming it, I mean, it was still a sore subject.
Yeah,
I don't
sure,
know
absolutely.
If they were all
fresh wounds.
I don't think that they were all that welcoming to making a movie that featured Nazis at the time in Austria. That I think that people that live there really had to warm up to the production of this movie.
Yeah. Oh, I bet. Yeah, because I mean, there is very clear memorabilia, or not memorabilia, but like you know,
imagery,
paraphernalia. Yeah, that's what I wanted to say. I mean, and like swastika imagery and armbands and full like Third Reich
the big
outfits
ass flag.
And
I was like, whoa.
Not even. I mean, not even 20 years removed.
Yeah,
from all the events of World War II.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And and the Rolf's uniform and the
fuck Rolf
and you're right. The Heil Hitlers that are just kind of peppered in. You're just like,
they started out. They started out like casually.
Yeah.
When earlier in the film, when a like messenger brings a telegram to Uncle Max, and he says it like three times throughout that scene.
Yeah.
And then it's like every time there's a Nazi in the scene, somebody's saying Heil Hitler.
Yeah.
And she's like, "Girl, give that a rest."
Yeah. Yeah.
The captain's not having it, though.
No.
He's a proud Austrian. He believes in his country. Right, believes in his patriotism.
Yeah, he yanks that flag down and tears it up with his bare hands.
Should. As he should.
Yeah, Hulk Hogan style. Just rips right through it like a phone book. Okay, let's see.
I did have a question about the... when they're trying to sneak out and they're like pushing the car and the lights are off and everything.
Oh, right.
I looked up what that car was. It is a 1937 Mercedes-Benz 540K Cabriolet. I think I pronounced that correctly.
Cabriolet.
How did they fit 9 people into that car?
Don't ask. They put Gretel and the other one in the boot. There's kids in the trunk.
Tied them up to the grill.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very cute car though.
Yeah. Super.
Very cute car.
Yes, absolutely. Of course, it would have to be a Mercedes since they are in Bavaria or wherever, some Laplander country. I love when the nuns are just like, "We've sinned."
Yeah,
we got some distributor caps.
They're out here stealing people's catalytic converters. Yeah.
I want him to come out from underneath the car.
I mean, one of them was really like the big shit talking nun.
Yes.
Yeah.
She was the one of just
she really warmed up to Maria. Mm-hmm.
Oh, fuck Maria.
Yeah.
But yeah.
To being her biggest fan.
She did her one, solid at the end of the movie.
She was the one that called her Liberty Gibbet.
Yep. No, she says a clown.
No, I know. She's the
clown.
That's worse.
Even worse.
I think I'd rather be called a Flibbertigibbet than a clown.
Absolutely. A will-o'-the-wisp.
But there's just something about them hiding in that cemetery that,
That scene is so
I don't want them to be. I don't want them to be found.
No, absolutely not.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely not.
Shining those flashlights.
Yeah, I mean it's long, but I mean movies of this time period of this era, the takes are different. They're a different pace, but it's still effective. You're still just like, oh my god, and then fucking Rolf.
Yeah. You think he's going to...
Almost had him. You think he's going to let him go.
You think he's going to go with him.
Yeah.
No, he's too wrapped up in...
Hitler Youth.
Proving himself in Hitler Youth. And he's like, nope, this is the crowd that found me, so I'm just going to put my all into this.
Yeah. And he blows his damn whistle.
Asshole.
Fucker.
There is a funny parody of this scene though in Family Guy. I don't know if you guys remember it, where they're like, oh, I've sinned, and they pull out the car, and then another sister is like, oh, I also sinned, and she pulls out Ralph's head. and Mother Spring goes, oh my god, is that Rolf?
Is it one of those things?
And she's all like, yeah, those Nazis.
Is it like The Simpsons with Citizen Kane, that could you just like string together all the Family Guy
I'm sure
scenes and just make
the
movie. Entire movie?
Yeah.
Probably. I think that you could.
Yeah.
We
could fill it in with European Vacation, Charlie's Angels, like all these other instances.
I bet
fill in the
done
gaps.
It.
Yeah.
But that's what I love about this movie. I mean, they're walking across those mountains at the end of the movie. Iconic. Like, this movie's iconic. Like, I love it. They don't make them like this anymore.
No, absolutely not. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like I said, built different.
Yeah. I'm just like, they're gonna walk across those mountains. Okay.
I was reading that the real Von Trapps escaped from a train. So they did not actually physically walk across the mountains, but I mean cinema darling.
Yes.
They gotta walk across those mountains.
Right.
Which imagine that you have to be careful of what side of the mountains you were like crossing on. Because you could just be going right into like Hitler's summer house.
I was actually
reading that.
I thought you were going to say, I was actually at Hitler's summer house.
No, I've spent several weekends there.
I was reading that those opening scenes with The Sound of Music, that like right over the hill was like one of Hitler's main estates. So it was kind of like shot,
like accidentally snuck in.
No, I mean like those scenes were kind of shot like roughly in the like within a couple miles of where he had an Austrian house. Yeah.
Yikes. Well, it's not unfair.
Not a good guy. Yeah. Somebody should do something about him.
Oh, no. Oh man. But yeah, I mean this movie would you call it an epic?
Oh yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's an epic scale.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's
showstoppers.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's the thing that like we said, the songs are so iconic, they're just built into our consciousness as like a culture. Mm-hmm. And we're just Americans. I would imagine in Europe it's kind of the same way, like, you know, especially like Julie Andrews being English. Christopher Plummer's, is he British or is he American? Alfie knows. We have to look that one up.
Christopher Plummer is Canadian.
Canadian.
Oh, how about that?
Yep.
Okay.
Hey.
Hey. but yeah, it's just something that for it being a movie musical and just a musical in general, it has a widespread appeal. Like all these, like Seth MacFarlane and Mike Myers, both straight white males.
Love it.
Love it.
Yep.
And incorporate it into all their projects. Like, it's just something that, you know.
But I do think that's
universal.
But I do think that there's something interesting that this movie does. I mean, it's a blindside with a lot of people. I mean, this year on Drag Race, they did a rusical of The Sound of Music.
Sure and I did. Mean,
pretty much just Plasma was the only one familiar with the musical.
Yeah.
And as they were fighting insane. Over, like, who's going to be the lead of the rusical, Plasma kind of had to put her foot down of that. I am the most familiar with this goddamn material. I am going to be Maria.
And she won the damn challenge.
And she won the damn challenge.
Good for her.
Yeah. And this is a cast where the eldest is 31.
Yeah.
I think.
32, I think.
Yeah. I think Sophia
is like 32. 31. Yeah.
See, that just kind of goes to show you. Yeah, exactly. Especially when you're going into the Drag Race circuit. It's like, you know, the age range of the contestants is getting younger and younger.
Right.
But it's still RuPaul's show.
Yes.
Right. And, you know,
there's still teaching
original drag lame Methuselah. Yeah.
They're still teaching, you're going they're still to teaching have the to, children.
Correct.
Yep.
There's no right or wrong way to be gay or whatever. But there are things that you should know if you're going to get into that competition.
You need to know.
And the Sound of Music is one of
Liza,
them.
The Sound of Music, Madam.
Wizard of Oz.
The Puppet, Madam. You know.
Max Headroom.
Yeah, just stupid things.
Blossom.
Yeah, stupid references that are kind of universal to the culture.
Because RuPaul loves the cunt face reference.
But, you know, the thing is, when we were kids, you kind of couldn't get away from the Wizard of Oz and the Sound of Music.
Even if you didn't watch it.
They weren't, you know, now with terrestrial television, there's a name for it. It's not terrestrial television. It's
stream television?
Not stream television, but just TV, like old TV, just network.
Yeah.
NBC,
oh, sure.
CBS,
yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah, that's terrestrial TV.
But there's a different name for it. Kids don't have to watch that. They're on YouTube, right? So everything else is on demand.
Yeah.
It's the parents' job
so,
to introduce it to
them. Yeah. So,
like my mama done did.
Right. And so when we're growing up, we either our parents thrust it upon us or network TV did, you know?
Yeah.
So it was there.
It's either that or General Hospital. Right. Make a choice.
Right.
But I mean, or in my case with my mom, of that, she was like a little girl when The Sound of Music came out. And like, what a moment to see this movie in the theater as a child that like she was going to introduce that to like her kids.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. So, I mean, we're getting to a point where kids now are just able to watch whatever they want, whenever they want. And things like Sound of Music.
Like I did today with The Sound of Music. Thank you, Disney Plus.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. Right. It's on Disney Plus.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Thank you, thank you, Fox Buyout.
Yeah.
The funniest thing, though, because you know how when you finish watching something on Disney Plus, it's like, oh, now try watching this. Yeah. So you want to know what my suggestion was when I finished The Sound of Music? Hmm. Very similar film.
Bluey.
Moana.
Oh. Ours was Moana, too.
Yeah. And I was like oh, Moana. That's the same thing.
Moana.
Yeah, same story.
There's some good songs in Moana.
Moana escapes the Nazis.
Oh, you guys, it's currently Thursday, March 14th in the year of our Lord 2024. At 9:42 p.m. Pacific time, we got to wrap this up so we can watch Miss Taylor's version on Disney Plus. Oh, that's right.
It's going to Disney Plus.
It just got dropped.
On that note, I gotta go.
42 minutes ago.
No. We can still talk a little bit. Mitchell, you told me something when we first met you. I mean, we've been talking about just kind of being introduced to movies by a parent as a kid, mm-hmm. and just kind of watching all of these. I mean, this is like, this isn't really a Disney movie. This is like, I mean, it's The Sound of Music. So it's kind of its own, like.
I'm surprised it wasn't
own,
a Disney movie,
its
though.
Own thing. Right, yeah. I mean, she had just done Mary Poppins. So yeah. It's like she went from Disney right into this. But I remember you telling me about your love for the movie Pete's Dragon as a kid. Do you want to talk a little bit about that? I mean, you talked about kind of your mom introducing you to all of these movies.
I have very vivid, fond memories of waking up in the morning. I had that on VHS, the Pete's Dragon. And my mom would pop it in and it would either be from the beginning or pick up where I was the previous morning. She would make me those little sausage biscuits you threw in the microwave because she was a single mom.
Yeah.
Had to feed these damn kids, get us on the way. And that was what I would watch. And I would watch that movie back to back to back to back to back to back.
I considered having you on for Peach Dragon, but I didn't watch the remake. I kind of went with...
I couldn't bring myself to watch the remake.
The remake's not bad.
Yeah. But it's
well, they took all the music out of it.
Yeah.
The best part about Pete's Dragon is not only is it that
candle
like
in the wind,
candle in the water,
candle in the water. Helen Reddy, oh my god, she is so pretty in that movie.
I love that moment where she sings that song. I mean, it's kind of something comparable to Julie Andrews' star power in The Sound of Music.
Oh,
that like
yeah.
when Helen Reddy is on the
she
top
wasn't really
of,
an actress when
she's
when they
on the
her into
when
that.
She's on yeah. the top of that lighthouse singing candle on the.
Candle
on
the
water. It's like it's a
tell
moment.
Me your candle
yeah.
on the water.
Helen Reddy is I'm woman.
I'm woman. Hear me roar.
Okay. I am woman. Hear me roar. Yeah. Okay. Feminist icon.
Yeah.
We love Helen Reddy.
All right.
But no, that movie is so good. I still regularly have in my regular shuffle like Razzle Dazzle Day and fucking just drunk Mickey Rooney.
Love it.
Sure. Shelley Winters in that movie serving high camp.
The highest camp. I paid $6 plus legal fees for that boy.
I have an enamel pin of Elliot the Dragon, and it says Pete's Dragon 1977.
That's cute.
Because I was born in 77 and my name's Pete. But I got it like in like 99 or like 98 or something. I got a long time, like pre-pin trading.
A lot of that might have come out of the parks because one of the few things that they had that was Pete's Dragon related was in the Main Street Electrical Parade.
Yes,
when
sure.
they used to
For
run
years,
that.
Yeah.
And that was the only time that you would see a Pete character.
Yeah.
Like in his his school clothes with the little hat and the little,
pussy
bow.
Yeah.
I mean, what
sitting
a,
on
I mean,
top of the Elliot.
I mean, if you were to have like a Pete's Dragon portion of the park, like what the Main Street Parade, like what a good like centerpiece for it.
Yeah. Oh, I thought you were talking about like an actual section of the park.
No.
Oh,
like
yeah.
I would just do Passamaquoddy and just have it all, like restaurants. Like,
take down New Orleans Square.
Ass, yeah. Just get you a good ass Maine lobster roll.
Love it.
And just, flirt with the fishermen.
Yeah. It was that era in the late 90s when my friends and I just were like, we're all in college. We have jobs, but we're still living at home. So all of our job money is pretty much funny money. So
yeah.
We were like, let's get Disney passes. They're only like $200. It's the 90s. So we would get Disney passes and just go at night. And we would literally be like,
that parade was great.
Let's just go and watch Fantasmic and then come home. Like, let's just go and sit down and get a really good seat and just chill and kiki until Fantasmic comes on.
Mm-hmm.
And we would do that kind of a thing.
Because I've never
we had
seen Fantasmic
passes.
In Disneyland.
Oh, it was great.
I've seen it in Florida, but I've never seen it in Disneyland.
I've never seen Fantasmic either.
Yeah.
I will admit, I've only seen it once in Florida, and it's because the part of the park in Hollywood Studios that they do it in.
It's in like a little amphitheater, right?
It is a full-scale replica of the Hollywood Bowl. And walk, yeah.
It was
and
closed when we
oh,
were
fuck
there.
Fuck that walk.
The
that,
walk
no.
back there, the walk yeah. to get to it takes about 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And then when you actually get to the amphitheater, it's to my knowledge, a full-scale replica. It might even have, like, a bigger seating area.
Yeah.
And wow. But the show is great. It's just, like, when it's over and you're like, fuck, now I gotta walk 20 minutes back to the park and then another 15 minutes through the park to get out of here.
Right.
It's just, it's not worth the effort. And then in Disneyland, it's in the middle of stroller hell.
Yeah, it's
so
awful.
It's just...
That's why we would go and be like, let's just go
that's
and
why
do
I got him
nothing
YouTube,
else.
But just watch it on YouTube.
Yeah. We were literally like, let's go do nothing else but get a good seat and mm-hmm. just chill because we can come back another day and get on rides because we got passes and we're locals, y'all.
Ew.
So that was kind of our gig like in college in the 90s because we were fucking nerds.
So fun.
Yeah. Anyway, sound of music.
All right. I always really love just hearing that story about you loving to watch Peach Dragon.
Ugh,
I think
it's so
I think
good.
It's very yeah. sweet. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If it wasn't Peach Dragon, it was Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
Yep.
Which I need you to see.
I have never seen Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. Yep.
Dick Van Dyke.
Peak. I mean, it's Disney Plus, man.
Peak Dick.
Yeah. Peak Dick.
I mean, he's pretty cute, Mary Poppins. Okay.
Yeah.
So kind of wrapping up on The Sound of Music. Mm-hmm. I mean, what can I say? I love this movie. I don't care if it's corny. I love it. I think that Julie and Chris are so charming yeah. together.
They're great together.
I love all the kids. Yeah. I love all the songs. Like I was mentioning before, there is not one flop on this soundtrack.
Right.
They all fucking hit.
Right,
no.
Right, right. Mm-hmm.
Everybody, yeah. everybody belts.
If I had to choose like what my favorite is, I was on my walk today when I was walking around a track in our neighborhood. I was listening to the soundtrack. I think that if I had to choose which one my favorite is, I think I'm going to go with Favorite Things.
Favorite Things.
Yeah.
It's a good one.
Mm-hmm.
It's a Lonely Goat Herd for me.
That one's pretty good.
Yeah.
And I mean, honestly,
I want that
like,
song played at my
kind
funeral.
Of like, kind
as
of
I'm
like,
lowered down, I want High on the Hill with Lonely Goat Herd.
Oh, see, mine is...
I want my friends at Yodel.
Mine is Very Merry on Birthday.
Oh.
As they're lowering me.
Mustard!
Actually, that was going to be if I ever had a celebrity sex tape got leaked, I want Very Merry on Birthday.
Actually,
to
no, I'm going to change it. Can I Have a Moment Like This by Kelly Clarkson?
Oh, that's a good one. I like it. I think for me, it's probably between The Lonely Goat Herd and just fucking Do Re Mi because that ending.
Yeah.
Oh, when all the kids are like, she's like conducting them and.
Yes.
And then the high into note. The guys.
Ah, yeah. Ah, yeah. Like, oh, so good. And. It's just such a great, like, it's the way she breaks down, well, the way Rodgers and Hammerstein break down the elements
of
songs
singing.
And the notes and just
you
music.
Accidentally learn how to sing.
This That's songwriting. Like, get out of here.
This is how music is made. There are so many notes in the universe that we can make a song out of.
Yeah.
And if you just... are in the same key and you mix them all up.
But what does it mean?
I love when
the little Cartwright
yeah.
girl says that.
Yeah.
But what does it mean?
Yeah. So yeah, Do Re Mi is a lot of fun. But
good song.
Yeah, I don't think any of us are in the minority for saying we just have a special place in our heart for this movie. It's just universal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so. definitely a classic film.
Yeah, absolutely. Mitchell, this was a lot of fun.
Mitchell, thank you so much. I'm glad that we could sneak you in before...
I'm so happy that I could.
You were going to leave us.
I know, the big move.
The big move.
Cross country.
It's not... It's just bye-bye for a little while.
It's just bye-bye for a little while. Yeah. Yep. I mean, we're going to have to give us the so long farewell.
No.
Auf Wiedersehen adieu.
Auf Wiedersehen adieu.
Yeah. Yep.
I'd like to stay and taste my first champagne. Yes?
No.
But
yeah, this was so much fun. Thanks for coming
on. We're definitely going to come visit you.
Yeah.
You always have a place to stay.
Absolutely.
You always have a place to stay.
Orlando.
And we'll all go to Disney World.
Yes, absolutely. And Universal
Studios.
Yes. Yes. We love that Velocicoaster. We're going to visit you and
Nick. It made Nick throw up when we went last.
Really, we're going to visit the Velocicoaster.
We got the front row when we did
it. The new park is going to open soon.
Oh, damn.
Yep.
Okay. Oh, we're getting
not, not sponsored by
Fast and
Universal,
the Furious roller coaster.
It's chocolate.
Speaking of which, listeners, we'll post some the Baroness and the Baroness.
Listeners, I do also have to apologize of that. If you do not watch Drag Race, I'm sure that you are listening to this episode just being like these fucking like gays.
Hey, listen, they know what
Drag
show.
Race.
They know
damn
what show this is.
They
yeah. know what show this mm-hmm. is. If you don't watch Drag Race, sorry for you and your boring.
What
life.
Is wrong with you?
JK, we love you all. But Mitchell, we'll We'll Skype with you. Well, we'll see you soon because you're helping us move.
Yeah.
And we're holding you to that. It's on the podcast.
It's listen, it's set in stone.
We'll drag you if you guys don't show up on the next episode. But this was a ton of fun. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me.
And thanks so much for listening, everybody.
Thank you so much.
Yes, indeed. Our good friend Mitchell and his lovely partner, Nick, they will be moving away from us.
I'm going to miss them.
Leaving California. We're going to miss them a lot. But, you know, we can do these episodes over Zoom. Mm-hmm. So, and they're also heading out to Orlando, so we can go visit them and we have an excuse to go to Disney World. So that's always a good excuse for us to head out there. But thanks for listening, you guys. This is a fun episode. And but I think right now it's just about time
for Patreon shoutouts.
Patreon shoutouts.
Let's hear them.
So we want to give a great big hello and thank you to all of our active patrons over on patreon.com/moviesthatmadeusgay. And that includes Courtney, Christina, our friends at How Do You Drew, Andy, Kate, Pep, Tammy, Roberto, Brett, Daisy, Kelly, Chrissy, Steven, Desiree, Laura, Thomas, Lori, Brenna, Jessa Rabbit, Lawrence, Lisa, Alexis, Thomas, Millie, Ted, Benny, Dramel, Melanie, Nicole, Susan, JJ, Shelby, Paul, Jamie, Drew, Genevieve, Dawn, Joshua, Aaron, Nick, and Shannon, Christine, and finally, Rufino. You guys, thank you for being patrons.
We have some fun stuff going on the Patreon every month. So if you join at the $5 level, you will get the television that made us gay, that we watch an episode of a TV show that we grew up on. February's episode, we watched The Simpsons.
Yes, indeed.
That, I really like talking about TV on the Patreon. It's a lot of fun.
It's
just at the $5 level. But if you go to the $10 level, you will get the watch with us commentaries.
Yes. And the TV shows.
So $10, you get two bonus episodes a month.
Mm-hmm. Including our weekly Friday free episodes available to everybody. You'll get two bonus episodes a month. One that's a commentary track where we choose a movie, we watch the movie live and record our conversation, and we give you instructions on how to play it back, sync it up with the movie if it's streaming. We try to pick movies that are streaming so that you can find a platform to go ahead and hit play on your Roku, hit play on your laptop, sync up the tracks, and it's really fun.
When I have all my shit together, I'll put up episodes that are finished, too.
So sure.
And that's for all levels.
Episodes that are in the can but are not coming out live for maybe a week or two.
When I'm ahead of the game, I'll do that.
If they're ready and edited, we'll do an early release on Patreon. So you get the episode pre-release before the general public. So that's also fun. And we usually do this at the $5 or even the $1 level.
I do.
That's for everybody.
I do them at all levels.
So even the $1, you get the pre-releases. So that's a lot of fun. So head over to patreon.com/moviesthatmadeusgay for all of that fun extra content.
You know what is free is to give us 5 stars and to write us some kind words on Apple Podcast Review.
Yes.
We would love
indeed.
That.
Indeed. Open up your Apple Podcast app, search Movies That Made Us Gay, even if you listen on Spotify. Do it on Apple Podcasts. Give us 5 stars. Write us a review. We'll read your review on an episode. Then go to Spotify. Give us 5 stars there, too. It's easy. It's free. And if you're just walking around an Apple store and you find a laptop, search for Movies That Made Us Gay on their podcast app and give us 5 stars.
I do it whenever I go into a Best Buy or an Apple store at the Americana.
Is it shady? Maybe.
Does it count as an actual play? I think so.
I don't know. Maybe it does. Hey, gets the engagement flowing. So be like us and do the same thing. So yeah, head over and do that. But you know, follow us on our socials, you guys. We are at Movies That Made Us Gay on Instagram, where we've got tons of fun little memes.
Mm-hmm.
We give you insights on what episode is coming out that Friday. We'll tell you on Wednesday. And you get to catch up on all of our fun shenanigans whenever we go out in the town and go to movie locations or fun, you know, LA shenanigans. We let you in on all of it. We're also on Twitter and Blue Sky and the other one.
That's very
MUG Pod.
That's very Homer when he's thinking about all of his family that were lost in Omega Man and the rest of them.
The other one.
And the rest.
Maggie, the dog and the cat and the TV.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
yeah. You can follow our personals. My name's Pete. I'm at Peter Lasagna on Instagram.
I'm Scott Youngballer on Instagram, and follow my letterbox and see what I'm watching.
Yes, indeed. Thank you so much, everybody. Until next time.
So long, farewell. Auf Wiedersehen, adieu.
Adieu.
What is it you can't face?